You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family.
Welcome to this episode of the Business of Practice podcast, where we focus on the business and human sides of equine veterinary medicine. In this episode, we're going to talk to Dr. Katie Larson about her experiences opening an emergency-only practice. I'm your host, Dr. Amy Grice, business consultant and former equine practice owner. The Business of Practice podcast is brought to you in 2025 by Care Credit. Dr. Larson earned her bachelor's in biology at College of the Holy Cross in 2011 and her doctor of veterinary medicine from the Mississippi State University College of Veterinary Medicine in 2019. She completed a rotating internship in equine medicine and surgery at Littleton Equine Medical Center in Colorado. In 2021, Dr. Larson returned to New England, where she worked at an ambulatory practice until establishing Saltwater Equine Emergency Services based in West Newbury, Massachusetts, in August of 2024. She is passionate about supporting equines and their owners in critical moments, and also supporting her fellow veterinarians through helping them have time away from their practices. Dr. Larson currently serves as the president of the New Hampshire Veterinary Medical Association, and she serves on the planning committee for the New England Veterinary Medical Association. She's also an active member of the AAEP, contributing to groups that emphasize practice culture, business strategies, and the welfare of working equids. Welcome, Dr. Larson. Congratulations on your new practice.
Thank you, Dr. Grice.
So how did you decide to start an emergency-only practice, and how does it all work?
Great question. So I always wanted to be a business owner. I just wasn't sure about what capacity and what that would look like. So when I was in vet school, I tried to go to as many VBMA, Veterinary Business Management Medical Association, meetings as possible. And prior to veterinary school, I worked as a tech actually at a practice where the vets were involved in the Decade One group. And it sounded like an awesome program. And I couldn't wait to join even before I even went to vet school.
That's great. Oh my God.
So for those of you who don't know what Decade One is, it's a group of equine vets who are typically in their first 10 years of practice, who meet on a regular basis and go over business curriculum. So that kind of started everything. The emergency only idea came to life when a friend of mine went to the AAP president's luncheon, and she met Dr. Graves, who told her about her practice model. And after that experience and her telling her how successful the business was, how she enjoyed that aspect of veterinary medicine, my friend came to me and told me I should start a practice like this because it could speak to my strength. And for those of you who don't know Dr. Graves, she's currently on faculty at University of Tennessee and runs a program out of their veterinary school with a similar emergency-only model for local practitioners. And she started her own model in private practice back in 2004. So it's honestly been around for a while. So I thought about this concept more and more and found myself enjoying weekends on call because I was either being productive in the field or accomplishing stuff at home. And at the time, I was actually picking up emergency shifts, extra emergency for additional compensation at my previous practice. So that sparked a little bit of an idea for me. In general, I really enjoy emergency work because you never know what you're going to get, and people are genuinely grateful. which is nice.
You're the hero. You know, like you go and it, I remember being like kind of pissed off when I'd get woken up in the middle of the night to go for an emergency. And I was, you know, like barely awake and I'd get out there and start driving. But when I was on my way home, I was always smiling, you know, like I had done something good for somebody and I felt really good, even though, you know, I was kind of mad when I got up.
Yeah. Very rewarding work. That's for sure. So what my model looks like, it's similar to Dr. Graves's model. Prior to putting all of this together, I did reach out to other veterinarians who have similar models just to see what this would look like, and ended up kind of forming mine around her model. So basically what it looks like is it's subscription-based emergency only. So I work with several veterinarians on a routine basis, and they are grouped by location so that I prevent a situation where I'm going way out of someone's practice range and making their normal wait time, you know, a lot more. I want to be cognizant of the practice area of each veterinary practice. So I keep that in mind for planning. And so basically what I do is I charge the practices a subscription fee per shift, and this covers my operating expenses and the potential to have no calls, which occasionally happens. And in terms of billing, I bill clients at the time of service, and I actually tell them when I'm on the phone with them after I initially get the call, which typically comes from that practice's emergency service, that I do bill at the time of service and I am a separate practice, but everything will go back to their regular veterinarian. So everyone will be up to date in terms of communication.
Do you ever get pushback?
No. I mean, I will tell you that it doesn't work every time because of situations like, well, the owner's not here, the trainer's just here.
Mm-hmm.
But some of the practices I have an arrangement with where if I don't get paid by their client, they will pay the bill, which is really nice.
That's a good way to set things up because they know which, you know, yeah.
Yeah, but it's generally not been an issue. It's more of the occasional owner that's not there.
Right.
The Business of Practice podcast is brought to you by Care Credit. Care Credit keeps equine veterinarians at the heart of care by providing horse owners with simple, budget-friendly financing options. By helping to bridge the gap between costs and care, Care Credit supports healthy financial relationships between veterinarians and their clients. Clients have a flexible way to pay over time for all types of care, and practices get paid in 2 business days. It's a payment experience everyone can feel good about.
So how often are you taking shifts? Like how does that part work?
So typically I do 2 to 3 weekends per month. And I do about 2 days during the week of on call. It kind of depends. And I, like I said before, I try to group them by location so that it's fair to their clients. And also if I'm going to be on call for one person in that area, it maximizes the potential for me to get calls essentially.
Of course. That sounds like a good way to do it. How has starting the practice changed your life?
That's a great question. So this model actually holds me accountable to do my notes in a timely manner. As like many others in our profession, I can be a bit of a procrastinator. So this really allowed me to focus and get my notes in on time. So I have an agreement with all the veterinarians that I work with, that after my on-call shift period is over, I have the notes to them by 10 a.m. And there's occasionally exceptions to the rule. Say I had a doctor's appointment or was up all night with something and I would just communicate to them. But typically it works pretty well and I just do the notes right away and they usually get them the night before.
Have you used anything like an AI scribe or anything like that to make it easier on you or not yet?
I've thought about that and honestly considering it, but just looking at all the overhead costs and the amount of calls that I see, I don't know that it's worth it at this time, but I am considering that because I think that would be very slick and efficient.
Yeah, that's what I hear. Obviously, being out of practice myself, I haven't had any personal use of it, but it sounds fabulous. It really does. It really does.
It does. Yeah. So in terms of other ways that it changed my life, I'm able to set my own schedule and able to charge fairly and appropriately, as well as get paid at the time of service to make this sustainable for me as an equine vet, which has been really nice.
So do you have time to ride your horse?
Well, I don't actually have a horse, but I do have a friend that has 7. So I try to keep her around. I have a lot more time during the week, which has been nice. So we try to go on trail rides when there's not a lot of people out there. So that's nice.
Yeah. You know, a lot of places now, you know, that people know where all the like really wonderful places are, either to hike or to ride or whatever, like on the weekends when most people aren't working, they can actually you could actually see another person or several. Yeah.
Exactly. So that's been really nice. And another thing that this has allowed me to do is to devote more time to organizations that I've been involved with, which has been nice because I tend to take on a lot. So this past fall, there was some legislative study committee through the state of New Hampshire. So I was involved in a study committee that looked at the scope of veterinary technicians in practice, which was really, really interesting, and got to know the legislators very well. Was able to make some progress for the state of New Hampshire and allow those people to understand our perspective and really what our roles are in veterinary medicine and how it's different from per se human medicine, which a lot of people are familiar with. So that was really cool and a bit of a lengthy task. So I had the flexibility to go to multiple meetings, which was really great and, you know, awesome experience. Another thing that I've been able to devote more time to is just getting involved. I was able to be on a panel at Tufts just talking to students about small business models, which was really quite interesting and exciting to give back to the profession. So that was good.
You know, all of the things where you lean in and do those things that are utilizing your knowledge and experience and education about veterinary medicine, but they're outside of practicing, they are so amazing in making your life as a professional more full, and you're so much less likely to burn out. Mm-hmm. It's fabulous. And, you know, the mentoring thing or the you know, being involved in the legislature, that is very cool. And you need time, just like you said, to do that. That's, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. That was really cool and kind of a unique experience, especially with the happenings in Colorado, we'll just say.
Sure. I mean, my guess is that having formed those relationships with legislators, that they will reach out to you again for your help in crafting legislation. So, you know, I think this was not your last party with them.
Absolutely, absolutely. The other thing outside of veterinary medicine that I've been able to do and works well with more daylight hours during the week has been, I'm in the process of training for a marathon. I've done a bunch of half marathons in the past, but kind of made it my goal to do one this year. So,
oh my God, that's like running for 26 miles, right?
Yeah, sure.
So, where is this marathon going to be held that you're signing up for?
It is in Wells, Maine, so southern Maine. So, I was trying to pick somewhere that would be nice.
Yeah. And when is it happening?
It is in May.
So you, how many miles are you running a day now?
It varies between 3 and 8 right now, but in a couple weeks, I should be closer to 12 something.
Wow. I can't wait to hear how that goes. I mean, that just seems like a big goal. You're going to be, when you do that, you're going to be so proud. Are you going to have like a team to sort of bring you water, stand along the road, cheer you on?
Hopefully.
I mean, I think it would really help. Like, imagine having like friends every few miles to say, you can do it.
Yes. Yes. I hope so. A couple of my friends have expressed interest in coming. So hopefully I will. My mom is running Boston Marathon this year, but it is not running the marathon I'm doing, but I'm sure she'll be there to watch.
Right. Right. Has she run the Boston one before?
She has. She's done it probably like 5 or so times. Hasn't run it since 2018, though. So it's been.
So I went to Wellesley College. The marathon goes right by Wellesley. So I remember how exciting that was. And just like there's people running by for a long time. Yeah. Yeah. That's very cool. So with other people that are thinking about an emergency only practice, what are the most important things they should be thinking about? What are they like? Are there things that they may not be thinking about that they ought to, or some things you've learned?
So my big thing in starting the practice is never underestimate the importance of relationships you have with other veterinarians in the area, because for me, that's really how this works. You know, I've been a prior employee at multiple practices that I work for right now, either as a veterinarian or as a technician. So I have a very strong relationship with those practices. And oftentimes people can be hesitant to give up the on-call or worried about their clients if they don't know you. So I feel like the reason that this is successful for me personally is because of those relationships that I've established in the past, which is great. I would also say before you start something like this, it's important to look at the area and what the needs are for the area. Before I set this up, I kind of thought about what this would look like and what the need would be. If you're in an area where there's lots of veterinarians and it's very competitive, that may or may not influence your decision to open a practice like this. Or if there's already several co-ops established, there may not be a need for something like this. So it's really important to get a pulse on the area and if your services could be needed.
You know, it's interesting because I know a co-op down in the Florida area that ended up actually hiring someone to be an emergency person to sort of do shifts for each of the practices that were in the co-op, and they all banded together to pay that person. So, you know, even with co-ops, sometimes there's things going on with the veterinarians in the co-ops, like one of those veterinarians, her husband got a very prestigious award to go do research in another country. And so she went with him for the year, and they were able to cover her client's emergencies while she was gone because her relief person couldn't do it all. And then there's maternity leaves and things like that. So, you know, you think about it, sometimes that I bet that the areas that have a lot of practices may have even, you know, lots of people needing fill in for certain things. So, you know, I think you're absolutely right. You have to just know the area where you want to do it.
Absolutely. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And I would say that you shouldn't really judge whether they need coverage based on whether they're a solo practitioner or a four doctor practice, because it really just depends on the situation. And you have to kind of dig deeper into it to figure out what exactly the needs are. So yeah, I agree with you totally on that. That's great. So kind of switching gears a little bit, but I would really, in this type of practice model, think about your overhead as well as your equipment. Because in this model, I have really not used my x-ray machine many times. So in the end, I was very happy that I had got a used machine, just because it makes it much more feasible. There's other practitioners who I've talked to that share equipment, which also could work in certain situations. So I would really think about that equipment and be pretty careful about what you get, because you may not use it that much or may not have a lot of opportunity to use that.
That's a good point for sure. Mm-hmm.
And then in terms of when people could do something like this in their career, my feeling is that I wouldn't do it straight out of school. And the reason is that you really need to have those relationships established and be fairly confident, because you're going to see people you've never met all the time. I don't think it's impossible, but I would recommend getting some experience prior to doing something like this, in my opinion.
And you know, some of the emergencies you go on, you never in a million years could like imagine what you're going to see, you know, like,
absolutely,
like the horse that goes through the oak board fence and, you know, has this 4 foot long piece of wood sticking out of their body. And maybe, just maybe, it has gone in behind their elbow and stayed on the outside of their ribs and gone back 3 or 4 feet. Mm-hmm. And then all you're doing is like flushing out all these little slivers of oak, as opposed to it going into the interior of their body, which is a much quicker call.
Yes, absolutely.
But yeah, so when you were talking to the veterinarians with whom you already had these relationships, did you take them, say, hey, can we go to breakfast or can we go to lunch? Or how did you talk to them? What did you do to like pitch the idea?
Yeah, it was typically either a phone call, conference, or we went to lunch, dinner, that type of thing when I presented the idea. That's, yeah.
And how did they react initially? Did they say, I need to think about this, I need some time, or they were like, oh my God, I'm so happy?
I honestly think they were excited.
Uh-huh.
I got generally very positive and excited feedback. There was not a lot of fear or concern, because I feel that a lot of veterinarians, emergency is not something that they love, or they don't love it because they have to do it on top of all the regular stuff that they do.
Right, right. I mean, emergencies are so interesting a lot of the time. And you know, they're just, if you're getting bored with what you're doing day after day, emergencies are super fun because of that. But you're, you know, the piling it on top of the rest of your day, not so good. Not so good at all. Yeah,
absolutely. And then another thing for me is that I require payment at time of service. You know, it's worked every time for me, like we talked about before. And as a bonus, it is good training for their primary vets, who they may not be as good at paying. So it's twofold.
That I applaud you, because that is absolutely critical, because you need cash flow and you don't know these people. And so, you know, they may not need you again, or so you don't have the same ongoing relationship necessarily. You've got to be payment at the time of service. And I love that you have, with most of your practices, not a guarantee, but like they're going to stand behind you and make sure you get paid.
Yes, that's great.
That's pretty terrific. So anything else that you'd like to share with our listeners?
So I would say, don't be afraid to try new things, even if it hasn't been done in your area before. And don't hesitate to call any equine practitioner who has a cool idea or is doing something you'd like to do, because I basically just blindly called Dr. Graves and she helped me immensely with all of this. So I can't thank her enough. But I would just put yourself out there, really.
Yeah, I mean, as you will see as we sign off today, I'm all about embracing change. I mean, it's just so important to think about all the possibilities of how you can imagine a life that you would love and then make it happen. And so that's kind of what you've done. And I'm really proud of you.
Thanks. Another thing I would say, there's always an initial fear of client expectations. You know, what will this client think if they're not seeing their regular vet? But really, I've gotten no pushback in this situation, especially when they know that this is enabling their regular vet to have some time off to get away, to be with their family, that kind of thing. So
that's one of the things that's so wonderful about providing this service, because you're providing it not only to the clients, but to the veterinarians. Like, you are truly giving back to the veterinary community in a way that allows it to be so much more sustainable. It's a wonderful thing. Thank you, Dr. Larson. And thank you all for joining us for the Business of Practice podcast. And a big thanks to our sponsor, Care Credit. And to all my listeners out there, be brave, embrace change.